Oh, you guys, that's all right. It's Friday. Come on, you don't have to do that.
Mona, get up.
No.
Mona, everybody else is standing.
She doesn't deserve a standing ovation for bagels.
You look like you're being really rude right now. She's going to think you don't like her or something.
I love her, but I'm not giving her a standing ovation for bringing in bagels. It's not like she brought in croissant.
Hey, these are good bagels. We're from Panera.
I love Panera, but they're not ovation worthy. I'm sorry, they're just not.
Ovation worthy?
Ovation worthy.
What does that mean?
It means not everything deserves a standing ovation. Some things you gotta earn. Bagels, not ovation worthy.
There's an everything bagel, Mona.
And everything is delicious, but everything is not ovation worthy. Even that everything bagel.
Well, what is ovation worthy then?
I don't know. Things that are like big performances and singers and solos and stuff like that. Not Panera bagels. I love Panera. No offense.
You know what, Mona? You're right. Not everything is ovation worthy. Did you hear that, everybody? Not everything is ovation worthy. We shouldn't be clapping for everything, right? It's not all ovation worthy.
Oh, come on.
Oh, what a wonderful introduction from Megan Mack, producer, and Mona Isler, Beth Adams, and the entire WXXI staff for their standing ovation for Beth Adams bringing bagels from Panera. This hour, we're talking about standing ovations and whether we are suffering from ovation inflation. It was a few years back that the New York Times said that Broadway has an epidemic of standing ovations. And we've heard The Guardian and The New Yorker defend standing ovations. Do we see too much of it? Is it the adult version of giving everyone a trophy? Is it time to be more judicious in what we decide is worth a standing ovation? Our thanks to the folks who put together that intro. But look, this is serious, everyone. I know, we're going to end the week on a light note, and you know what? We need it. The world has enough heavy news. I know a lot of people are following very heavy news stories today. NPR is going to be covering those stories throughout the day. This is our chance to have a little bit of a decompress and talk about a subject that, just look at the State of the Union. Congress gave 75 standing ovations. This was actually counted by NPR. 75 standing ovations to President Trump. They did roughly the same for President Obama. 39 pauses for applause, 75 standing ovations. That means Congress offers a standing ovation twice as often as they simply applaud, and most of the time, they're standing for boilerplate political ideology that is as predictable as the sunrise. So maybe standing ovations don't mean anything anymore. Maybe audience etiquette does need to be reformed. Let's welcome our guests. Here to set us straight from down the hall, Brenda Tremblay, host and producer for Classical 91.5. She's going to really make us understand how we've been going wrong here, I think. I've seen your comments on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Eric Grody is here, director of the Goldring Arts Journalism Program at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University, and a frequent contributor to the New York Times. What's your official title of the Times?
Freelancer.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to give you a standing ovation for your modesty there. Thank you. Appreciate having you. Ralph Maranto is the artistic director at JCC Center Stage. He's bringing the perspective of someone who is a director, but also a performer in many cases, and an audience member as well. Nice to see you here.
Good to be here.
And with us is Michelle Brown, who is also an actor. Nice to see you, Michelle. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
My pleasure.
All right, Brenda. I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Too many standing ovations, yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. I have a story. So about 10 years ago, I had a chance to go to a conference in New York City that was sponsored by the National Endowment for the Arts. And it was amazing. I don't even think they do it anymore because there just aren't that many arts reporters and print journalists to do it. But from all over the country, we went and we lived on the Upper West Side and we went to things every night and wrote about them and had them workshop the next morning by guys from the New York Times, way less modest than you, Eric. They were so arrogant. Alex Ross from The New Yorker was there. So we would go to these concerts at night and then write about them and get them workshopped during the day. So our first assignment was to go to Carnegie Hall and hear the Cleveland Orchestra performing Mahler's Fifth Symphony, the Resurrection Symphony, which is just what it sounds like. It's to wake the dead. It's so jubilant and life-affirming at the end. It's so amazing. So I went, and you know, to be honest with you, I'm pretty sophisticated, but I was such the wide-eyed country mouse. I was like, wow, Carnegie Hall, this is so amazing. And I walked in, and I sat down right up close, and next to me was this little guy. He looked kind of like a grandfather. He was shorter than me, which is saying a lot, because I'm only 5'4", so he was really short. Anyway, long story short, they played this great symphony. It was moving. It wasn't amazing, but it was pretty moving. But at the end, the guy next to me jumped to his feet, lifted a cane high in the air, and started waving this cane around. So I went back to my hotel room to write my review, and I was trying to be very objective and kind of step back and write about the history of the piece and how it should be performed and what the composer's intentions were. And, you know, I was very detached and very objective, but by the end of my review, I kept thinking about that guy with the cane, right? So I incorporated that into the end of the review, and at the end I wrote, the audience leapt to its feet, and there was this guy waving his cane around in the air. You can't see me waving the cane on the radio. In any case, so I took it in the next morning. We had this workshop at Columbia University. I handed it to Tony Tomasini, mm-hmm. who is their leading classical yep. music writer, and he read it out loud. And he said, there's something you should know about that guy with the cane. He's there every night, standing up, waving his cane. Shouting bravo, bravo. You know, someone might be paying him.
No matter what.
No matter what.
Like clockwork every time.
And he's like, well, what did you think? And it was this huge light bulb moment for me because I realized that I had gotten caught up in that mob mentality. Like I was part of this amoeba of enthusiasm that was just reacting like an organism to this piece of music. So ever since then, I've been much stingier about standing ovations. And I do think they've become somewhat meaningless, to be honest with you.
All right. So we're going to go around the table. But the dividing line and the follow-up we're going to put to Brenda is, you may be stingy in your mind, but are you the one person in your row sitting, and will you sit, damn it, no matter what everybody else does? We're gonna find out, because that's when it starts to feel the social pressure. Eric Grody, what do you think?
Well, hearing Brenda say that, actually, I completely understand Tony's side, and I also understand your side. I mean, the larger point as someone writing a review is your experience of it should have no... this guy next to you or the person next to you grumbling the whole way should have no bearing on your own enjoyment of it or lack of enjoyment. You know, that's your experience just like it's his. But by the same token, I think I've seen pieces grumbling about standing ovations, and they tend to come from critics. And part of what I think of when I think of that is it's almost like a rear guard action. It's these critics saying, wait, we're the ones who have opinions that get to be publicly professed for better or for worse. And who are these people trying to override our opinion or chime in with, like, I just think that's one of the chances. We legislate, you know, with classical music, you know, they grumble, you're not supposed to do things between movements. You know, this is your, like, it's very proscribed. And this is where a chance where everyone has to react however they feel they should react.
That's something I'd like to bring back, actually. They used to clap and give an ovation if they liked a movement of a Beethoven symphony, for example, so they would have to play that movement again. I think that's something we should bring
back. That would be very cool. But that's interesting. You're saying it's the non-critics. It's the regular audience saying, we're going to offer a stamp of approval whether you like it or not. And critics, it may not be a standing ovation worthy to you, but if it is to us, we're going to do it.
Yeah. And if it's the kind of show where a lot of musicals will have a little extra dance or extra song at the end of it, and everyone who's standing gets to watch it, and if you're insisting on sitting and you don't get to see what's happening, well, that's your loss, I guess.
Okay, Ralph Maranto.
Well, there's no doubt that standing ovations are overutilized and oftentimes unearned based on the performance there, but we don't get to regulate what the audiences want to do. We can certainly talk about it, but are we going to tell moms and dads at a high school production of Fiddler on the Roof not to stand for their children? I mean, I think that the kids need
that's part
experience.
Of the point. Maybe we are going to say that this hour.
I don't know. I mean, I think that to try to regulate what's going to happen is nearly impossible. People are going to do what they're going to do, and talking about it may or may not make a difference. But I think we have to, as theater professionals and theater performers, we have to start thinking about, does that mean anything? They applaud at the end of every musical number anyway, so if I was off key, are they still going to applaud? Probably. But I know that when I'm watching an audience, I gauge that standing ovation and I rank it. So, like,
wait, you can rank an actual standing
absolutely.
Ovation?
Absolutely. So when we do the Hitmakers, which is our popular music series at the JCC, we've been doing it for years. People love it. We sell out. Everybody comes. If the show ends and the moment the lights come up, half the audience has leapt to their feet, then I know we did it right because they are so into it. But if it's a good show and mom stands up and she's in the second row and then a few other people do, and by the time we get to the end of the curtain call, half the people have stood up. Okay, well then, that's like a 4.5 standing ovation, where the Hitmakers one was a solid 10. I did a one-man show the other night at JCC called Depression the Musical, written by my friend Herb Katz. And I was just like floored that the audience was having such a good time and was reacting so well to it. And when we got home, I said to my wife, did people stand? I wasn't really paying attention to whether they were standing or not. She goes, yeah, it was a mid-standing ovation. You know, a bunch of people stood up right away, and then a few more did, and by the end, everybody did. So I figure I got about a 6 or 6.5 or a 7 on my standing
ovation. So a chain reaction standing ovation gets viewed differently.
That's right.
And
it's
you're
got,
taking
it's got
the
less
temperature.
Points. Absolutely.
So it's like the Richter scale.
That's right. Absolutely.
The Moronto scale.
All right, Michelle Brown, what do you think? Overdone or not?
Absolutely overdone. I think they have become the participation trophies. You know, everyone gets one. Everything's fine. So completely overutilized, I think. And I think Ralph made a lot of good points. You can't really tell mom in high school not to stand up and clap for her kid. She's going to do that. But that's a different setting than some of the other settings that we have around town. So I think there's some gradation there. And I think I like Ralph's scale because I look for that, too. It's like, was it everybody and was it right away? or did it kind of, was it a trickle down kind of effect because that person right down front, you know, my dad stood up. So now everybody else feels like they have to. So I agree.
Now, how does this translate? And let's ask the panel then, given you've kind of laid the groundwork for how you feel about these things, how does that translate into how you will sort of behave as an audience member? And forget the kids play because, okay, even as a parent, I think there's a discussion to be had about whether we're overdoing standing ovations for kids because that's okay. But let's say you're at Broadway and you think, I don't really feel like, I thought it was good, but, you know, I've seen better Jesus Christ Superstar, whatever it is, and I'm just going to clap. I'm not going to stand. But then a few people stand and a few more, and then most of your row is standing. Are you staying planted?
I am. I am that jerk.
You don't mind?
I mind, but I feel like it's important to say, nope, I don't feel like that was ovation worthy, so I'm going to sit here.
I like the terms ovation, inflation, ovation worthy. It's like the sponge worthy of our generation.
but when is the tall guy standing in front of you, then it's like, I don't even know who I'm clapping for because I can't see them.
And then you may have to stand.
And I got
to stand
just so I can see what's going on. Right, I might be missing something exciting.
Brenda, do you stay planted?
I do, unless I don't want to stare at the butt of the person in front of me because it's really awkward. Plus, sometimes it, you know, I feel guilty. I feel guilty just sitting there, even if I wasn't moved personally. I feel like, all right, I better get up and clap because I don't want anyone's feelings to be hurt. Like everyone's paying attention to me at the very back of a 3,000 seat auditorium.
Right.
You know?
Right. And it's worse for me because being a producer and a director in town, people know me. And some of the theaters in this town are very small. So if the entire audience is standing up and I'm not, then the talk of the town is Ralph from JCC was here last night. He didn't stand.
But apparently, based on your scale, even if you stand, they're going to notice if you're rolling your eyes going like,
I was a 4.5 stander, not an 8.3.
Yeah, you
stander.
Were a slow to stand stander, and you were an eye rolling stander, going like, okay, all right. So you're going to get the same reaction if you do that.
I am. So I have a very distinctive laugh, I am told. So
let's hear it.
It has to make me laugh.
Natural.
I can't just force that, right? But whenever I'm at a show and people know I'm there, I always get the, we heard you laughing. And then I know, well, that means if they know I was there and I didn't laugh, then they know I didn't like it. So I'm in trouble. But there is a guilt factor involved with all of this. And is it any different than tipping for the waitress, whether you get good service or not? I don't know. It's a lot of the same kind of thing.
That's okay. That's an interesting comparison. Erica, do you stay seated if the audience stands and you don't feel it's merited?
Well, so I'm often there as a critic, and critics play by slightly different rules.
Okay.
Like when you're, we've all had the thing at the, you know, best case scenario at the end of the show, sometimes even during intermission, where the person next to be like, so what'd you think? And you know, and you never want to get into that.
Read my column and you'll find out.
Yeah, like you'll find out. And so what I always say is, well, I'm still sifting through things, or, you know, yeah,
some I'm processing.
Blow off answer. But so like, you know, whether you stand or sit, you know, just like Ralph's saying, like that's a tell, like the way you spring to your feet or don't. And, you know, what we always enjoyed, we preferred when it was the winter months. And so if you kind of wanted to get up, you could sort of turn your, putting your coat on into a sort of demi standing.
It's a cheating standing ovation. I like the demi standing.
There are workarounds. Yeah.
The demi standing is definitely a new term. And I like the whole, oh, I'm, maybe I'm standing, but I'm just putting a coat on move. I'm totally stealing that.
Completely non-committal.
That's fantastic. Let's find out what somebody else who knows a little about criticism thinks. Jack Garner is on the line with us. Go ahead, Jack.
Hey, hello, guys. Listen, I like what he just said about putting on the coat. I do think it's interesting that this mass standing effect, which we're standing up effect that we've been seeing, does sort of time itself to the getting your stuff together and getting organized to leave. So it's sort of a bit to that. My biggest problem with this mass thing of standing ovations is that it diminishes the reality of the ones that you really want to mean something. And Ralph has a good point about, I think the real ones, you can sort of tell, but maybe you can't. One of the things I do, quite frankly, and to overcome this, is if I really feel strongly about a performance or a person's performance within the performance, I'm not above yelling bravo. I mean, it's like a way to go over this fact that we're all just kind of faking and we want to go home. But then, you know, if I yell bravo, that's an obviously sure thing, you know. I do have one question, and Ralph may be a good one to answer, or anybody else on the panel. I wonder, in Rochester, a town like Rochester, which is a really good theater town, I've discovered that since retiring. I've gotten involved with seeing more theater than I ever used to see when I had to go to the movies all the time. And my question is, do you think standing ovations are more likely when it's hometown heroes, friends, people you know, a theater company you want to survive, versus the RBTL touring shows, or even Jiva, where you know they're equity professionals or whatever? Is there a difference in the amount of ovations because it's your hometown heroes?
Stay there, Jack, because I want to follow up with you. That's a very interesting question, and there's actually a couple layers to that. Go ahead, Ralph. You want to start? He directed it your way.
Well, sure. So I think that we get those standing ovations every time at the Broadway tours. We get them at Jiva, too. So I don't think that people distinguish that. Of course, when it's family and friends, that's easier for it to get started. So I do think that there is some connectivity to that. But on the other hand, maybe we just have to admit that we live in a society where live performances are becoming less common as people are watching things on social media, they're watching Netflix and not coming to live theater. If coming to live theater has that excitement that makes you want to leap to your feet, even if it was only a mediocre performance, who are we to say to those audience members, you know, this is part of your joy of experiencing live theater. So make that part of the excitement. We don't applaud at the end of movies 99% of the time, so maybe there's nothing wrong with it, and we just have to get over the definition of what an standing ovation means.
I think that's a very interesting point. Brenda?
There's definitely some of that in Kodak Hall during RPO performances. You know, those crowds, like, they're keeping the flame alive. When they stand up and clap, there's some of this desperate, joyful, like, hey, we're alive, we're still listening to classical music in person, right. Yay us, you know, so there's definitely some of that.
And I also, I want to piggyback on Jack's comment, and I'll go back to Jack in a second, but to Eric and Michelle, I think when Jack says, are we more likely to sort of jump to our feet for a hometown audience, I also think there's a question in there of our expectations. So Eric, if you go, take yourself out of the critic, and so let's just say you're going to a show, which critics probably don't do that very often just for fun because of the job, I get that. But let's say you're doing that and it's not Broadway. If your expectations are lower, maybe it's not to the level of a show that you'd see on Broadway, but if it exceeded your expectations, are you more likely to stand?
Well, the closest the short answer is yes, I think so. Right before my son was born, you know, it's one of these, everyone tells you, you don't have that many nights free, you know, it's my chance. I'd never been to the Metropolitan Opera. And so, you know, I was at theater all the time. I went to see a production of Peter Grimes that was directed by a prominent theater director, but I was just going to the opera, which I know not that much about. I saw some critic buddies of mine who had misgivings about it. I was off duty that night. Like, I was there to get a lot out of it. And so I kind of got what I came for and loved it in a way that I probably wouldn't have if I had felt like I was, you know, checking off certain boxes as I went. And so I don't remember if I jumped to my feet. It was the Met, so I probably did. They do tend to there.
Okay, yeah.
Well, all that effort. Yeah. All that singing.
Yeah.
Well, and then the effort, I mean, we say that. I mean, you know, we're sitting there passively experiencing this thing that the people up there have been working, I mean, Ralph can tell you, Michelle can tell you, like, people are working very, very hard for that duration of time and probably worked very, very hard for weeks or months leading into that. It just seems like it's not asking that much to vote with your feet.
Get off your butt and stand up, right?
Eventually.
Can I ask Michelle, from your perspective as well, does your expectation change? Because you've said that you're willing to sit when everybody else is standing. Are you more likely to stand if it's not just something great, but something better? So let's even take a kid's performance. I will stand, not just because it's my son, but if I go, oh my gosh, that was way better than I expected. You guys really pulled it together. Does your expectation change it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I go in more open, like Eric was saying, you know, with sort of no expectations or sort of low expectations, and it's way better than I thought, much more likely to be on my feet and clapping and cheering, you know, for the little ones. I mean, we would do that anyway because we want to encourage them, but there's definitely another measure of just sort of willingness that's there when it exceeds my expectations.
Sure.
No matter where that actually levels out.
And I really like Jack's idea of yelling bravo. So Jack, I just want to go back to you because I thought of a recent show that I was at, I think in October, you know, Jeeva did the show on Susan B. Anthony's relationship with Frederick Douglass. And
yes.
Yeah. And so for me, two outstanding performers. All right. Precision of language matters in this conversation. Two very good performances. I thought one very good performance, one mind-blowing. And the gentleman who played Frederick Douglass, I should have been yelling bravo because everybody was standing, and that's fine. But for me, Jack, that was a moment that, like you say, if you really want to make it count and put a stamp on it, if the feeling is standing ovations have become de rigueur, then yelling bravo, that would have been a moment for me. And I think I'm going to follow your lead there, Jack. I really like that. And I wonder if we'll see more of that because if we have to distinguish somehow when something's more valuable.
We got a standing ovation with a woo.
With a woo! I like
with
it, Jack.
And I wonder if that even makes more profound now the time when you don't stand. Are you really making a negative statement if you stay on your butt? You know, I don't know.
Well, Jack.
It's an interesting topic, guys. I'm enjoying it.
Thank you for the phone call, Jack. And so to Jack's point there, I'll let Jack go. To Jack's point there, I want to ask the performers, I mean, everybody's a performer, but I really want to ask Ralph and Michelle, if you don't get a standing ovation in a culture where it's almost always happening, does it feel like, what really happened here tonight?
Absolutely. It speaks volumes, as would be completely unexpected because it has become sort of the norm. So that just seated audience would definitely be sort of all sorts of red flags and alarm bells.
Ralph, forget demi-standing or forget the 4.5, you know, sort of the gradual standing ovation. How, I'm sure you've at least once in your life experienced an audience where you go, I don't even think anybody stood up.
Right.
I didn't say it was recently at the JCC. I mean, like, I'm sure it's in a past life somewhere.
I don't know if we've... Oh, okay. I think there is also a difference between musicals and plays. I think very often if it's a play, a powerful story, something interesting, introspective, that often the audience will stay seated for it. And I think that is also almost a sign of respect that they weren't minimalizing it by going woo, 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 and standing and jumping to their feet because the performances were so good. They were just so moved by it that they just want to take it all in and not disrupt that. But I think with musicals, you pretty much always get them nowadays. But I'm going to answer that question by quoting, I posted this on my Facebook page today and people have been weighing in, but I'm going to quote Scott Adams, who's a wonderful local actor, starred in the flick at the JCC last year in Glengarry Glen Ross at Blackfriars. And he posted, "Standing ovations depress me. I like it better when they remain in their seats, arms folded over their chest with a grimace on their face, as if to say, that's all you got? It makes me do better at my next performance."
So. Well, I was going to ask you about that. Have you guys, I'm sure this has never happened, but have you ever felt guilty for getting a standing ovation?
When you felt like maybe you didn't deserve it? Is that what you're kind
of
thinking?
Yeah. Oh. Not that you've ever been under-rehearsed or under-prepared.
Did it
ever
feel inauthentic?
Yeah.
I would say no, only because it's become so commonplace that you just go, well, okay, they stood. There we go. No surprise.
Yeah, no, I feel the falsehood of that. it just sits with me. I'm like, no, this is incorrect. That was not ovation worthy. But you
everybody
know.
Sit down.
Michelle's only going to be standing up to tell everybody else to sit down.
Clap if you must. Jen on Twitter says, as a theater mom, I have a strict rule to never start a standing ovation for a show that my kid is in. I definitely wait to measure the audience reaction. So that's another term.
Oh, interesting.
A standing ovation starter. Mm-hmm. You all know who you are. You want to be the first one. But then what's your impact psychologically on the rest of us who maybe didn't want to stand? You standing ovation starters. Think about it next time.
And what happens if you stand and everybody else doesn't?
Whoa. Awkward. Super awkward.
Well, if you hold it out long enough, the biggest standing ovation starter I've ever seen was a family member, and it was the only time a musical has had a standing mid-show. It was when Carol Channing was doing Hello, Dolly for like the 17,000th time or whatever, and she, you know, sings the title song, and her husband leapt to his feet, clapped, and did not stop clapping until at first the people right around him kind of hesitantly got into kind of like a like a crouching ovation sort of thing.
And then eventually,
and they'd say she'd stop the show with a standing ovation every time. It was the most inorganic, contrived standing O.
That is terrible.
Crouching ovation, demi-standing. Look at the vocabulary we're creating. All right, let's see if we can add to it. This is Paul next on the line, calling from Brighton. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, good afternoon. How would quasi-ovation, would that work too?
Or? Sure.
Quasi-ovation,
quasi,
yeah.
Sure, we can go with quasi.
Good. Okay, two quick comments. I think this is following Brenda's comment about the folks that may be at the Kodak Theater, Eastman, whatever it is, after a classic performance, say, hey, isn't it great? We're here. So I'm thinking 80% of standing ovations are for the audience and maybe not the performers. And my second thought is, a couple of years from now, what's going to have to be done to top a standing ovation? Will you be expecting folks to come up on the stage and hug and kiss you, or what do you expect after standing ovation? So you guys have a great day, and it's an interesting topic. Paul, a very good first world product.
Well, it certainly is. And, you know, I preface the conversation by saying I think the world needed this conversation this hour. And so, Paul, thank you for that. I think the last part was a little cheeky, but I know you're going to stand on your chair, Brenda. What are you going to do?
Absolutely. Well, I think that half the ovations in Kodak Hall are what I would call exit ovations. They are the reaching for your coat, having it for the door. And just a music history nerd note is George Eastman believed that was people's number one priority in Rochester was getting out the door, which is why the building is designed so you literally can spill out. There are like 4 billion exits out of Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater and tunnels to get out in weird ways. And he really believed that. In fact, his seat was right next to like an exit, you know? So, yeah. Exit ovation.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. Tim in Pittsford, Susan in Lima, we're going to take your calls after our only break of the hour because we want to get more of the audience perspective. And there is actually a defense of the standing ovation that we haven't gotten to yet, and it was from The New Yorker. Michael Shulman just wrote it this past September, and we're going to see if it carries any weight with our panel as we discuss the ubiquitous standing ovation. You just heard my colleague Brenda Tremblay, host and producer for Classical 91.5. Michelle Brown is an actor. Ralph Maranto is an artistic director of JCC Center Stage. Eric Grody is director of the Goldring Arts Journalism Program at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University and a contributor to the New York Times, among others. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back and take more of your feedback on standing O's next. I'm Evan Dawson, Monday on The Next Connections. There was a royal wedding, and yes, the world was watching, but we're going to have a conversation with those of British descent about whether it's time to abolish the monarchy. In some ways, you might think this doesn't affect you, but boy, a lot of monarchies still exist these days. Taxpayers foot the bill in a lot of cases. Are there benefits, or is it time for the world to change? We'll talk about it Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get back to your phone calls, and this is Tim in Pittsford. And knowing Tim, I know where you're going to fall on this. Tim, you think everyone deserves a standing ovation. Trophies for everyone, right?
you know me too well.
Yeah.
First of all, kids, I've got a few kids. This is just a quick thing. A three-year-old has 3 months to memorize one sentence, and we freaking give him a standing ovation. Completely unnecessary. And if it's my kid, I am definitely sitting down and getting called Scrooge for it. But... my wife and I had
season tickets to Jeeves. Well, we've had them a few times, but it was probably 15 years ago. She was newly my girlfriend. We go to a play, and it's packed there. And it goes through the first half of it. We get to intermission, and we go out to have drinks. Don't say much about the play. We come back in, half the place is gone. So half the place is walked. During the second half of it, people are still standing up, giving ovation. I'm looking at my wife, and she was very nice at the time to me. She was being nice and clapping, too. And after, I said, did you like that? She goes, yeah, it was pretty good. And I looked at her, and I said, blank, hated that. She goes, oh, my God, thank you, because I did, too. But yet you still, I said, we could have saved ourselves and been at the bar for an hour if we had just walked like the other half of people. But then at that time, I was thinking, maybe I'm just too dumb to get this, or maybe the people that are actually standing up are too smart for the room or something. But I didn't get it all. I mean, there couldn't have been 200 idiots like me in the room that had just gotten up and walked. That Jeeva rarely ever misses on anything, but I don't get the mentality anymore. I'll listen off there.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you. And so maybe what Tim's then girlfriend was thinking was, look, I feel compelled to do this because it's a date, there was pressure. And that's kind of in the line of what Michael Shulman says in The New Yorker, defending the standing ovation. So, Tim, let's see if this kind of lines up with what your wife was experiencing. Shulman writes the following in defending the standing ovation. He says, applause is a custom, and the custom, at least in the United States, has irrevocably changed to a standing ovation. The reason I'd conjecture is the soaring price of theater tickets. The average Broadway ticket now costs $109, and the highest priced seats for mega hits like Hamilton and Hello Dolly can reach the $800 range, not to mention that resellers sometimes charge more than $1,000. Long-running shows rely ever more on out-of-towners willing to spend big on a Broadway show. After investing that kind of cash, perhaps theatergoers are quicker to leap to their feet as a form of self-justification. For these prices, I'd better have had a superlative experience. So Michael Shulman is saying it's the money. And Tim, maybe that's what your girlfriend was experiencing at the time, the obligation. Eric, do you see that at all when you cover Broadway?
I do. I mean, for the very reason that Michael Shulman's saying there, like it is a big investment. And you've decided that you're going to have a good time. And, I mean, you also decide that that's what... All right, so the way I see it, there are two kinds of audiences for these things. I reviewed a show off-Broadway years ago, and it was a really twisty, interesting play. It was just lots of surprises. And at intermission, I loved it. And I bumped into a guy in the lobby who hated it. He was thinking about leaving, and the reason he gave is he said, I have no idea what's going to happen in the second half. Which to me, I could think of almost no better recommendation for this show than to be genuinely surprised at what would come next. And that was really uncomfortable making for him. And so I feel like some people clap and spring to their feet because they have just gotten exactly what they expected to get. And it was done at a high level of quality, but it was very comforting or soothing. When I have been inclined to jump to my feet or wave my cane or say bravo or whatever, it's been because something just kind of blew my mind, something that I was not expecting to be affected the way I was affected, did that for me. And so, you know, I theoretically, at least, I approve of the one kind and sort of maybe kind of a little bit disapprove of the other kind. But who am I to say, you know, if they got out of it what they thought was worthy of a standing ovation, more power to them.
And Ralph, this from Shulman is a bit of a cousin to your comment that people more rarely go to live performances. So when they do, they feel that energy. So that's a little different than saying I spent a lot, but it's still sort of related in the way that people feel like, look, I'm here. I don't do this very often.
Wrapped up in the experience, wrapped up in how much you paid for your ticket. But, you know, we have talked about how in Rochester you see them all over the place too. And at the JCC, we only charge $29 for a ticket. So it's not because they spent an arm and a leg to come that they're standing. It's because they genuinely felt like that was how they wanted to finish their experience of watching these incredible people on stage putting on this incredible performance. And so that made them feel like they needed to stand up and express that excitement
who are we to say no?
Okay. Michelle, do you think price, ticket price, has impacted standing ovations at all?
Absolutely. I have a cousin who likes to take trips to Broadway with his family, and that's part of the package deal. I've spent the money for the tickets. We've spent the money to get there. You are going to stand up and clap at the end of this show. That is just what's going to go down. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that it's just part of the experience, and that's just your ending, and you get to have that live experience, and you get to get wrapped up in it, and, you know, it was pretty great, or was it? But, you know.
There is a little bit of, Brenda, what we would call motivated reasoning or confirmation bias, that I spent X money, I'm at the RPO, or I'm at Broadway, I am going to stand and cheer because what I just spent money on must have been great. In the same way that in the wine world, someone spends $100 on a bottle of wine and they're going to tell you it's great, even if it's corked. And you could tell them, this is actually corked. And they go, no, you don't understand. I spent $125 on this. It's great. It's probably, there's some confirmation bias.
Yeah, and you're suggesting really there's no free will. You know, like, well, you walk into a theater and, you know, you get into this group trance. No, seriously, you walk into a theater, you're kind of stripped of your individuality. You sit in the dark. You're surrounded by other people. You don't say anything. You don't speak. You're with them. You get into this hypnotized trance of the art or the play or the theater. It's an amazing thing that we do. We sit there in silence for hours and hours listening to other human beings talk and sing. And then maybe there's an entity that we become that decides that there's going to be a standing ovation, and you have no choice, Evan. You're going to be on your feet no matter what.
Well, you've just entered us into a whole discussion on whether we actually have any free will at all.
I know. Right.
There have been books written on this. That'll be another day. But,
wine question, that's an ego thing. That is just people's ego wanting to feel good about its choices in life, I think.
That's probably true. And there's plenty of bad wine above $100. I'm ashamed I haven't bought it, but I've had a chance to taste it. It's hard to tell people, but it's true. This is Susan in Lima who's been waiting. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I only stand if they deserve it. I got broken into standing ovations as a kid when my dad took us to see Ethel Merman performing Annie Get Your Gun. She got 13 standing ovations for one song, and each time she repeated the song, she put more into it. So by the end, I think she was singing with Bruce Yarnell the song where they're singing about what kind of wedding they want. And by the end, she was like beating him on the chest. And they finally had to indicate to her, it's time to go on. But after that, somebody's got to really earn that standing ovation, unless it's somebody's little kid.
Okay. Well, even if it's, but Tim, Susan said, even if it's someone's little kid, you still got to earn it.
Well, if they're up there, knowing how terrified I am of being on stage, if a little kid is up there and they're trying to say their lines and they pull them off without a flaw, you know, then they're going to get it. Otherwise, somebody's going to get polite applause, or if there's a standing ovation, everybody else is standing, I might stand, I might not clap, I might tone it and be, you know, do a couple polite things, but I'm not going to scream and yell and carry on if they don't deserve it.
Susan, thank you. And that, by the way, if Tim is still listening, is the best defense of a standing ovation for kids, because, and I hadn't thought about this, it's not just the quality of the performance, it's overcoming any anxiety to perform sometimes for the first time. And the validation that they deserve out of that may be a standing ovation. So, Tim, I don't know. That might have been a rebuke that's pretty effective there.
Yeah, and there's other reasons for standing ovations. My friend Jim Hilliard went to see Gordon Lightfoot a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, he really struggled. He needed oxygen 5 times during the performance. He was having a really hard time. Was he a great singer? But, you know, it was Gordon Lightfoot at this point in his legendary career, and yeah, he got a standing ovation, even though, you know, it was meh.
So we have at the JCC right now, we have the Bridges of Madison County on stage, and I was lucky enough to be in New York and see the Bridges of Madison County on Broadway at its closing performance. And it's the first time I had ever gone to Broadway on a closing night performance. It was incredible. There's this packed crowd of a show that was closing because it wasn't selling enough tickets to keep running, but a packed crowd of people who every time somebody walked on the stage for the first time time, the show stopped for their applause. At the end of every major number, there were standing ovations, I think three or four times in the middle of the show, because this was the Broadway community saying, thank you for bringing this show to us. We know it's closing, but so what? We want to thank you for what you did to make this thing happen. And there was this incredible warmth and love in the room that I'm sure nobody stood up during any of the other performances. But on that closing performance, there was this thing that happened that was magical. And when I talk about that experience, I'm always remembering the four standing ovations in the middle of the show that made it that much more special for me as an audience member also.
And by the way, Bridges of Madison County is coming to the JCC?
It's on stage now. We have two shows tomorrow and one show Saturday, and then we close.
I have not only seen it on stage, I haven't read the book. I did read The Ditches of Edison County, which was like the Onion-like follow-up. So let me know if you guys... I don't think The Ditches of Edison County is going to get... That may be the only show that wouldn't get standing ovations.
Hey, I haven't got my distinctive laugh out of me, though. So there,
There we go. Let's see here. Keith is here to tell us that we need to find something else to talk about. Go ahead, Keith.
I just want to weigh in on the standing ovation. I think it's warranted depending on the level of the performers. I was at a color guard competition where a group of adults with developmental disabilities did the last performance, and they brought the house down only because how well they did with the ability that they had, and they got a standing ovation. I've seen Phantom perform by 5 to 7 different Phantoms. Some were worthy of standing ovations. Some, you just applaud at the end. But what about the standing ovation that happened? For example, we went to see Lion King on Broadway, and they got a standing ovation, but I was applauding everything from the actors to the music to the costumes to the storyline. I was applauding everything, not just an individual. But when you went to see a performance like Phantom and the lower peons come out first, you know, people sit in their seats, clap, 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 and by the time they get to Raul and Christine coming out, they start to stand, and as soon as the guy who plays the Phantom comes out, everybody's standing. And to me, I look at that as an entirety and not as an individual.
I think that's Keith, thank you for the phone call. I think that's an interesting point. Sometimes the standing builds up and happens at the end when the leads come out, but sometimes the best performers are not the leads. And as the critic, Eric, you've probably seen many times where the really superlative performance is someone who is not a lead.
I hadn't thought of that until he just mentioned that. And I have consciously or unconsciously, I think probably consciously, timed my standing up to the fifth billed person or the eighth person, you know, the person who was like, all right, that's the person who I'm recognizing. Now, you know, I'm one of however many hundred people in the audience. I wouldn't begin to think that that person would have any idea that I got up then, but it's just my own personal thing. Like when we're saying, how do you show these gradations? Well, I mean, that can be one place you do it.
I really like that. I saw you nodding. You agree?
Absolutely. I have done that too. And it's conscious. I do try to focus in on that person. And yeah, they can't see me. They don't know I'm there. But that's my standing ovation. It's for that person who really wowed me, who I really connected with their performance.
Yeah. And I want to, before we lose the hour here, a really interesting email from a listener on audience etiquette, which is part of this discussion. And it's been part of the classical music world. There are always people who go to an RPO show the first time, and maybe they will applaud between movements, and then they go, well, I didn't know when you're supposed to or not. And,
oh, I hate that. And so awkward.
And sometimes what I'm not comfortable with is shaming new audience members, because what you don't want to do is feel like, well, you're not part of the club. Right. But there is also an understandable line there where there is sort of, I guess etiquette's the right word there, because here's what James emails. He says, Evan, I'm a board member of two community theater organizations, and this topic fascinates me. I agree that standing ovations are overused, but that's more a reflection of our typical audience. I mean to say the way an audience expresses itself is relative. Audiences react based on their interpretation of the performance, and ultimately, if it comes down to expectations and awareness of etiquette, both are generally low. We end up with folks wanting to stand because that's what an audience is supposed to do, right? I'll follow your lead, you recently said, from the perspective of an audience member. Well, that's typically how audiences react. There are audience leaders who encourage others to react, but mostly that goes unnoticed. That's from James. Let's hit the etiquette point there. So, Brenda, I thought of classical, but I think there's an audience etiquette everywhere. And I'm okay with some baseline etiquette standards, but I don't like shaming people who may be new to a certain type of performance or not knowing, you know, typically you do this or that. And that's where I get a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I have never seen that at the RPO. I mean, people will if the, you know, it, for example, if the RPO plays Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and the first movement ends with da-da-da-da, you know, it's so exciting. And then there's always like two dozen people in the audience that clap. And it makes me happy because that's a spontaneous reaction. In some ways, more genuine than a standing ovation. That's just people reacting from their hearts. So bring it on, I think.
And why is it then? Because when those two dozen people do that, the rest of the hall will be quiet.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, yeah, oh, okay. Sorry about that. Whoops, I guess I'm not supposed to be doing that. And I like your reaction. What your reaction is, if that's what you feel, feel it.
Yeah, I almost sometimes, you know, if I really love something at the RPO, I'll look at my husband and I'll, you know, shake my hands like I really, really want to clap. And if I didn't know, I shouldn't. You know, it's just fraught. But, you know, last weekend, the RPO premiered Yolanda Codinesis's Harp Concerto by Jennifer Higdon. It was a brand new world premiere. And man, that got an amazing standing ovation. And it was just 100% ovation worthy. Just want to put that out there.
So I'm a big concert goer at rock and roll shows and all that kind of stuff. And of course, then you have the encore, right? So they go off stage and we all have to keep applauding until they come back. Because if we stop applauding, they won't come back. News for you. The set list was decided. They know they're going to take a break there. They're going to get their water. They're going to go have a pee break. And then they're coming back. And now we just have to sit there and applaud for 2.5 minutes because otherwise, we think they won't come back.
Really? I thought they're just waiting there.
That's
wondering
right.
If they should come out.
They're just gauging whether they think we deserved that finale moment.
You guys want to add there, Michelle, Eric?
Well, I was just about to say that theater, it's not as obvious as with classical movements, for example. But in musicals, you know, some songs end with what is called a button. You know, it's the da-da-da-da, you know, something like that. It's just usually that what that means is the song's over, you should clap now. There are other shows, I'm thinking of like Sondheim's Passion or things like that, that don't traffic in that much and sort of find subtler ways to segue into the next piece of music. And that's a very conscious choice on the director and the composer's part to keep you from clapping is largely what that's
Bridges of Madison County is the same way. Jason Robert Brown wrote the score with a lot of stuff that just seamlessly moves from one to the next because he doesn't want the audience to come out of the experience of living with what those people on stage are doing by stopping to applaud because the number was good.
Okay, but then question for you then. So that if they clap, if they don't listen to Jason Robert Brown's tacit instructions, is that a violation or is that bad?
Yeah, I'm disappointed when they applaud at certain points because I'm like, oh, I guess they liked the song, but you're supposed to just be caught up in the moment. But again, I can't control it. I can only put the show out there and let them do what they're going to do.
Ralph, have you seen things change over time, you know, in your career?
Oh, I definitely think that now the standing ovation is so commonplace that it really is like minimum 15% gratuity. Absolutely. I would say.
Well, I think you need to develop the scale. We're onto a scale.
Right.
It could be a thing.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a term I hadn't heard. Button, is that an industry term?
Yeah. I mean, Ralph and Michelle could.
Da-da-da-da. Bump.
Yeah.
And then, whoa, we applaud.
No, it makes sense to me. It's just not a term I knew. See?
And the songs are written that way and designed that way so that has the reaction. Where in Bridges of Madison County, for example, many times it ends and then there's this beautiful music element that transitions it so the audience doesn't know when they're supposed to applaud and it transitions right to when the dialogue starts so they never get that chance, which is what we wanted in the way that show was designed.
All right.
Other shows are production number, boom, button, applaud.
And some shows have,
that's where they're designed.
And some shows have both. Les Mis has both. There are times where, okay, now that, like, act or, you know, mini act within the act is now done and now's a good time to clap because people do want that release and need that release.
I love that we are learning new terms or new to me and inventing terms this hour. It's been great. As we get ready to close, I have an email I want to read and my mind goes back to what Michelle Brown, an actor, said earlier this hour that, you know, you can feel it when it doesn't really feel authentic and they're standing. Well, the Rochester City Ballet tweeted at us saying, even if a standing ovation has lost its special specialness because they are so common. We love being able to share that moment with the audience. And we heard from Nicole at Rochester City Ballet. She says, what I haven't heard so far is the magic of a live performance, a conversation between the audience and the performers. And I would never want to stop them because it's one of the pure moments of conversation between the performers and the audience. And I love how live performance brings people together. The standing ovation shows that. I take the Nicole's point, except Michelle, if you can feel that it's inauthentic, then that doesn't really feel like a very, you know, like bonding moment. It sort of feels kind of like, oh, you're standing because you think you have to. what do you make of her email?
It does and it doesn't. So when I was, when I was in high school at School of the Arts, one of my professors or teachers there told me very plainly one day, you have to let people enjoy that performance however they see fit. When they come up to you and say, oh, you did so well, or that was such a great job, don't you dare say, oh, I messed this up, or it wasn't good, or you accept that and let them have that moment. So even if it feels inauthentic to me, if that's where you are and that's what we managed to do for you, great. You know, I appreciate that that's where you are. So if it feels inauthentic to me, well, I have to figure out what to do with that. But, you know, you also have to let the other side of that relationship happen.
That's such a great way to end the program. And I think a little prescription is you're still going to sit when you don't feel like it merits a standing ovation.
Yes.
You're pro-sitting. Pro-sitting, Brenda Tremblay?
Yes, pro-sitting, but also pro-bravoing. Jack Garner.
I like that. I'm pro-bravo. Eric Grody.
Anti-groupthink, but pro every single audience member reacting how they feel it's appropriate to react to that performance.
Okay.
I can't stop them from doing it, so I'm going to go with my scale of levels of standing ovation with the woo factor.
With the woo factor. And just know that if you go to the JCC, you will not fool Ralph by standing if you don't really feel it.
That's right. But give me a woo if you liked it.
Pro bravos, pro woos. Our thanks to the entire panel. And as I've mentioned, you know, if you've been following national news and there's a lot going on today, NPR will have you covered throughout the day. There are moments on this program where we need to sort of take a breath and have a conversation that makes us smile, come together, think about our community, think about all the great arts in our community and all the people doing it. So thanks to everyone here. Thank you. I really appreciate all of your time. Great way to end the week. Thanks for giving us your afternoon here. And our thanks to... don't do that.
I'm not standing. We're not standing.
Woo! Standing. No one's standing.
Although Evan Dawson.
My cane. John Andrus, still sitting. Thank you, John, for still sitting, the engineer. And Megan Mack, definitely sitting, not standing. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice weekend. We're back with you Monday on member-supported public radio.